Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Come on, let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Graybar Sports Open Live. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Welcome in. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. We have our Tuesday edition of the program. Have you for a full 2 hours. You got a lot of me tonight. That's the way it was last night, too. You know what? It resulted in a Cardinals victory. So let's do that again. Cardinals got a good win yesterday, knocking off the Dodgers 3-2. And we'll see what happens this evening. But we do welcome you into the program. We've got a couple guests that are going to be on. You know, I've gotten a lot of questions lately about the players that the Cardinals got back. And I can go read like a scouting report on them. Yeah, and when I say got back, I'm talking about at the trade deadline. In the Helsley, Mats, and Maton deals. I can go read a scouting report on them. Anybody can do that. But it would be disingenuous for me to sit here and say, this guy's going to be this guy's going to be that. So I wanted to talk to somebody who's smarter than me, which that doesn't take much, but I wanted to talk to somebody who is smarter than me, especially when it comes to prospects. We are going to be joined in about 5 minutes or so. By Sam Dykstra. He is part of the team over at MLB Pipeline. He is so locked in on prospects. So yeah, we'll talk with him and basically ask him about every single player, all six players that the Cardinals got back at the deadline and what he thought. So Sam's going to join us here in just a little while. And then Corey Miller, our good friend from Channel 5 KSDK, he's going to join us at 7:05. So those are the guests today. We're going to kind of continue what we were doing during Redbird Rush Hour. This is our Tuesday tradition, I guess, and the fact that we have a full 2 hour Sports Open Line allows us to do this. So this is going to be, we're streaming. We continued the stream. For those of you who are watching Redbird Rush Hour, thanks for sticking with us. For those of you who are just joining us here on Sports Open Line, we'll continue the stream. We're doing this new, by the way, for our loyal video viewers. Previously, we had always ended the stream at Redbird Rush Hour's end and started a new stream for Sports Open Line. And I made the decision to stop doing that. I'll tell you why I made the decision. We have a chat, and it's a lot of people on YouTube are on the chat. And the chat sometimes doesn't even involve what we're talking about on the air. It's become kind of a community on any given day for people to come together and talk about Cardinals baseball as they're watching this. And when I end the YouTube video and then start a new one, that chat goes away. So I've been so heartened by the fact that so many people are watching and talking with each other and kind of making that part of the conversation that I wanted to make sure not to end that after just 1 hour of Redbird Rush Hour. So we're going to do this now. We're going to continue the video on the same stream after we wrap up Redbird Rush Hour, riding to Sports Open Line. That way, all of you folks who are chatting about what we're talking about on the chat and everything, you can just keep on going with that while also watching this video and being tuned into this show. So I hope you like that. That was a decision that I made, and we'll get. But the point I was trying to get to before I started patting myself on the back was we're getting questions. So today is going to be a very kind of conversational type show for the 2 hours. We'll have the two guests, and then we'll kind of roll through different topics about the Cardinals based off the things that Oliver Marmol said today, kind of like Kevin and I do a little bit on Redbird Rush Hour. It's going to be a few more cuts, a few more things to get to. We're going to do all of that, and then we'll take your thoughts on it as well. So, you know, one of the things that I really enjoy about these Tuesdays is, you know, during Gas House Gang, they talk to Ollie, and they get tons of information from Ollie, but they're not really able to break down what Ollie says and their opinions on it, whether they agree, whether they disagree, whether it's right, whether it's wrong, whether it's something that you could maybe go in a different direction with. So that's what we try to do later on in the day. So even if you listened in, and I hope you did, even if you listened in to what Ollie had to say, even though you're going to hear again what he had to say on certain topics, it's going to be more the cuts from him, and then we're going to jump in there and chime in on some of the things that he gets to. So here is just some of the topics that we're going to touch on between, but hopefully before we get done at 8, if we can get to three of it, get to all of it. The expectation on the three young starters that this team has, with McGreevy and obviously Pallante being in there. Just what you want to see from the starters that are going to be back next year. So it kind of took Miles Michaelis out of the conversation, even to a certain extent Sonny Gray out of the conversation, because you kind of know what you have when it comes to him. But when it comes to McGreevy and Liberatore and Pallante, what you want to see from those guys, not just through the end of this year, but next year. We'll hear from on kind of the communication that he had with players around the deadline. We'll talk some Joel Pozo and how the organization was able to find him. Could Kyle Leahy be moved into a starter? What are the opportunities that players are going to be given post-deadline? What is there to learn about players post-deadline? How things are going to look at third base? How do you get Nolan Gorman in the lineup every day? Like, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff, and we are going to touch on all of that as we go through the program. So, again, if you want to chime in on anything, you have the opportunity to do so. You can call or text 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. We'll open up the phone lines a little bit later. The text line is always open at 314-436-7900. You can always tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. And as I mentioned earlier, for those of you watching on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, there's also the opportunity for you to be able to just put it in the chat, and we'll see that as we go along. So we'll take a break, and when we return, Sam Dykstra is going to join us as we'll get his thoughts on the Cardinals and the various prospects that they brought in at the trade deadline. Our conversation with Sam Dykstra on the way in just a moment. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on 104.1 FM KMOX.
It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We have Cardinals baseball for you tonight. They match up against the Dodgers, game two of a three-game series. Of course, it is the post-trade deadline portion of the season. The Cardinals very active, and talk a little bit about what came into the organization. We are very happy to welcome on the program. He is part of the team over at MLB Pipeline. They do a great job covering the prospect world of baseball. He is Sam Dykstra. You follow him on Twitter at Sam Dykstra, M-I-L-B. Sam, thanks for coming on the program. Welcome back on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll get into some of the individuals in a second, but Cardinals bring six players into the organization with the trades of Ryan Helsley, Phil Maton, and Steven Matz. Generally speaking, did you like what they were able to get back in those deals?
Yeah, I think individually it was an okay return. I mean, you look at the Ryan Helsley trade, and you think maybe there would be somebody with a higher ceiling than Jesus Baez who would have come back, because we know how in demand closers are. But Baez entering the year was a really good prospect, loud exit velocities last year, really good in-zone contact. And I think the Cardinals may be getting him at a right time where, you know, the production's dipped a little bit, but they can rework him. They can make him in the mold that they want. And he's not somebody who's nearly a finished product, somebody more like Blaze Jordan who's knocking on the door. So there's an interesting mix. You always need more pitching. They get a couple of position players. It's not somebody who's going to knock a J.J. Weatherholt off the top spot. Nobody close to that. But they're adding depth here, and that's always desirable for your farm system.
Your colleagues at Baseball America had Baez as a top 100 prospect before the season got started. To what you just said, he fell out of that and some other publications. Like, you folks didn't have him there. But what has maybe happened over the last 3, 4, 5 months with Baez that his stock has dropped a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I won't comment on that. Why BA may have had him as a top 100 guy. They have their process. They do great work over there. But, you know, when we were looking at him coming into the year, he was coming off a torn meniscus in his right knee. We wanted to see how he would respond to that. That's a pretty major knee issue. So it's understandable that maybe it takes a full year to get your bearings back. Also, I don't want to overlook that it's really difficult to hit at high A Brooklyn. I know many people in the St. Louis area maybe haven't been to Coney Island, but it's just as you imagine. There are roller coaster rides going on beyond left field, in center field. The batter's eye is difficult. Right field is practically on the beach. You got the wind blowing in. So it makes for a difficult hitting environment. Getting him out of there may do him some good as well. But overall, I think coming off the knee was the biggest thing for Baez.
Yeah, that group of three all getting assigned to a high A Peoria in the Midwest League, that's a little bit of a different environment.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Midwest League is pretty pitcher-friendly in its own right, but you're getting away from literal sea level in Brooklyn and with those winds and just the distractions. There's so many things that can go on for hitters there.
The other two players that they got, you mentioned them in Dome, and Dome does slot into your guys' Cardinals top 30. The third player in Frank Ellisalt doesn't come into the top 30. What did you think of those two individuals?
Yeah, Nick Dome, kind of interesting. I mean, he gets tons of extension. It's around 6.8 feet. So it's 92 to 95 mile an hour fastball with 18 inches of ride. Plays above that velocity. He's got a gyro slider that plays pretty well off of that, and then an upper 80s changeup, very, very occasional upper 70s curveball. So it's a traditional starter's mix. I think he's still building something. He last year dealt with a little bit of an injury, was pitching out of the bullpen late at Mississippi State. So this year he's been a starter. He's still kind of building up to that third round pick. I think, again, like I was saying with Baez, like, you get him at an early stage of his developmental curve and you can help him finish off that, those traits, work off of that. I think he's very much a starting pitcher. Frank Ellisalt is also interesting. I mean, it was a good find by the Mets. Mid-90s fastball from a really low release. You watch him pitch, it looks like he's buzzing it right above bats. He's also got a mid-80s slider and upper 80s cutter. He's on the older side. He's about a year older than Nate Dome, and he was pitching at the same level. So I'm a little hesitant to put him on the top 30 for now. He definitely could. I received some feedback today of, like, he's right on the line there, so you could see him maybe by the end of the year. But it's really a special fastball, and that's what's going to drive him and maybe get him into a bullpen for good at some point.
Couple college pitchers there. Is it pretty important? And you alluded to their age. I mean, these are guys that probably have to graduate from single A pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, getting into high A is good for them for now. I would like to see either of them maybe touch double A by the end of the year. That's typically what I would like to see out of college guys. But again, like, Nate Dome last year was pretty limited, so he's still building up his workload. He's at 65 innings there right now. I don't think he's going to get to 100 by the end of the year. But I think in an ideal world, when you take a college pitcher, you would like to see them in double A. They're slightly behind that curve, but again, there's different circumstances for each of them.
Without a doubt, the favorite return player for Cardinals fans is Blaze Jordan. He's the guy who comes over from Boston in the Steven Matz deal. This guy has been he's been a celebrity for a while. I mean, you go back to 13, 14 years old when he's hitting 400, 500-foot home runs. And to his credit, he then turned that kind of celebrity into a guy who has steadily made his way up through the minor league system. And now he's, you know, on the doorstep of the big leagues at AAA. What's the next step for this guy? What do the Cardinals need to do from a development standpoint to turn him into somebody who can be a factor at the major league level?
Yeah, I think the big question for me is where is he going to land defensively? Because the bat is already knocking on the door of major league readiness. It's above average power production already, the 90th percentile in in-zone contact. He chased a lot in Worcester before the trade, but he was also good at making contact against non-fastball. So he's like pretty much checking every box except for that, you know, you would want him to be a little bit more selective. But the question for me is, where is he going to land defensively? He lacks range, so he's likely a first baseman, though he split time early between third and first. So they're still trying to get him work at both corner spots. But, you know, when you're a righty throwing, righty hitting first baseman, that offensive bar is pretty high. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to give him as many reps at third base as they can. But even so, he's still likely to slide over to first base, and then you're bumping into Contreras, and that can be an issue. He is Rule 5 eligible this offseason, so they'll have a decision on their hands. But the way he's hitting, I think he's most likely going to be added to the 40-man.
Rob Serfolio is the Cardinals' assistant GM for player development. We had him on the show yesterday, and he said that they are going to continue to play him at third base, kind of like you just said. So I'm with you. I have a hard time believing his long-term role is at third base, but for at least now, it seems like the Cardinals are going to continue to give him reps there.
Yeah, they have every responsibility and every reason to keep trying him out at those spots, and you never know, something might click at some point. You never know where there's an opening, right? There could be an injury at any time, and if he hasn't been playing third base in 5 weeks, but that's where the spot in St. Louis is open, you don't want to shove him up there for his major league debut at a position he's cold at. So keep trying him between both spots, and something might open down the line, or, you know, figure it out when the rubber really hits the road, but that's not coming until 2026 for a player like this.
Two players come over from Phil Maton from the Texas Rangers in Skylar Hales and Mason Molina. I found it interesting. These guys were right next to each other towards the back end of the Rangers top 30. When you guys shift over to the Cardinals, Molina comes in at 26, while Hales is not on the Cardinals top 30. Does that just show a little bit more depth on the back end of the top 30 for the Cardinals as compared to the Rangers?
I think part of that is the fact that, you know, we haven't fully updated our rankings. We made some tweaks right before the trade deadline, but we haven't truly shaken things up. So I think by the time we would have shaken things up for the Rangers, you may have seen Hales fall off. I mean, it's a mid-90s fastball, mid-80s slider. It's a classic relief pitcher profile right now, but the fastball was getting crushed at AAA, so his stock was going down a little bit. Meanwhile, Molina looks much more like a potential starting pitcher with that really, really good changeup and the fastball that works at the top of the zone, even though the velocity is around 90 to 91. So I think that's more reflective here, is that Molina was building his stock while Hale was kind of slipping a little bit. But if we had updated the Rangers list, you would have seen that happen before the trade.
Molina's already been traded twice. He was originally selected by the Brewers. Maybe that's a good sign for the Cardinals because the Brewers are so good at finding pitching. But for a young guy who's had a very short professional career, he's had an eventful career so far.
Yeah, and I always find that interesting when I talk to players about when they've been traded. How do you view it? Do you view it as the other organization wanted me and they wanted to acquire me and bring them in? Or is it this other organization that I'm just coming from found me, you know, found that I was replaceable or that I could be dealt? Most of them say that they like to be desired, and I totally understand that from a human point of view. Here, I think in this case, Molina, before he had pitched for the Brewers, didn't have a ton of value for them. Flip him for somebody who could help them at the major league level. And now for the Cardinals, they get to build off what the Rangers had done. He had pretty good results, 92 strikeouts in 74 innings. And to the Rangers' credit, they built him into a trade piece. Now it's the Cardinals who have to build on that development from here. I don't expect him to be flipped again. I don't think he's probably going to be in St. Louis for a little while. But I think this comes more from what he had put in the first year to make another team want him.
We're talking with MLB Pipeline's Sam Dykstra. Final thing for in the future, we'll probably reach out and try to get you on again to talk more about players that have already been in the organization and recently drafted. But I wanted to spend some time on these new players to the organization. But I can't get you out of here without just hearing your kind of updated thoughts on J.J. Weatherholt, as he is having no problem at AAA. A lot of Cardinals fans are hopeful maybe we'll see him before the end of the year. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. But what's your expectation? What's your comp? Where, as you look at J.J. Weatherholt, what are you expecting him to be at the big leagues?
Yeah, I think he's going to be one of the best hitters in the NL Central at some point. I mean, it's really good strike zone judgment. It's a guy who sees the ball incredibly well, shoots it to the gaps. We're seeing obviously better home run power than
maybe we were expecting out of the gate. I don't think I had J.J. Weatherholt as a guy who's going to slug 750 in his first 16 games, but I think he's pounding mistakes that pitchers are making at the AAA level. One thing I've heard over and over and over this year is that the jump to AAA is extremely difficult for pitchers. You're dealing with the new major league ball. You know, the grip's a little different. Sometimes they struggle with command. And for J.J. Weatherholt, given what we know from his bat control and what his power can be, he's jumping on those mistakes immediately. Now, what happens when he transitions to the major league level? I don't think he's going to be quite this hot, but I think he's somebody who could definitely compete for a 300 average year in, year out, hit 15 to 20 homers, play up the middle. That's a really valuable piece. That's a potential all-star, multi-time all-star. And slot him, I know they got to figure out Brendan Donovan and maybe move some pieces around, but putting him next to Mason Winn, that's a solid double play combination for years to come.
Sam Dykstra does an incredible job when the whole team at MLB Pipeline does. Just give a plug for folks who maybe haven't really jumped into following along with prospects and how you guys honestly make it very, very easy to learn about guys and see what's going on. I feel like that's part of what you guys do, just the education of what's going on below the major leagues.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Yeah, we rank all 30 farm systems. We do 30 prospects in each system. We do a top 100 overall. Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo do a tremendous job of ranking top 250 draft prospects every year. You can find all of that at MLB.com/pipeline. I will say we are updating our list completely, including the draft picks. So Liam Doyle will be included very soon here next week. We are in the midst of that work right now, and it's a lot of sleepless nights and contacting sources and getting everything as organized as we can. But it's very exciting to give these lists some new polish and some updated reports. So look for that next week.
He is Sam Dykstra. Follow him on Twitter at Sam Dykstra, MILB. Follow along with everything they've got going at MLB Pipeline. Sam, thanks so much for the time. We'll check in again real soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
That's Sam Dykstra. We'll take a break. We've got more coming up in just a moment. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Back to the Graybar Sports Open Line on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Back at it here on KMOX. It is a Graybar Sports Open Line. We appreciate you being part of the program today. As always, if you want to chime in on anything that we're talking about, 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. That's how you call or text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air. Or for those of you who are watching the video stream, you can leave a comment, and we can address some of those comments as we go along. I'm just curious to throw this out here. We'll see what kind of responses we get and whether or not we revisit this as the game, as the show goes along. I'm so used to games, as the show goes along. But we just had a good conversation about the new players that the Cardinals are bringing in. And Sam Dykstra, who we just talked to, man, he knows his stuff. Some of these guys, I don't know how they do it. It's tough enough to follow along with everybody in Major League Baseball. You get to these people who are really good with prospects. Man, you can name a random prospect from a random organization and boom, they're just going to tell you all about them. And Sam's a lot like that. So appreciate him taking the time. But if you are one of the people who had questions about the type of player the Cardinals are getting back at the deadline, and if some of those questions were just answered with what you heard from Sam Dykstra, I would be curious to hear your thoughts if anything has changed. A lot of people are not felt like the Cardinals should have gone more. I think that anytime you can augment your minor league system, there is value in that, especially when we're talking about contracts that are expiring. I don't think any of these players that the Cardinals got are going to be the difference between a World Series and not, but I think that the Cardinals did well to add to the organization. The other thing that we are doing, and this is going to be the vast majority of the rest of the show, I'm with you on Sports Open Line for another hour and 20 minutes. We'll take you till 8 o'clock this evening, and then I'll take over for Cardinals pregame at about 8:15 after the 8 o'clock news. But we're going to replay cuts from Oliver Marmol's conversation that he had today with Tom Ackerman, Chris Ronji, and Bernie Miklas that he has every Tuesday at 12 noon on the Gas House Gang. And the thing that I've gotten to do that show with Ollie once, and it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed doing it. I enjoy almost as much being able to play back cuts and kind of comment on the spot on some of the things that Ollie had to say. So let's start with this, because – I have been of the belief that the Cardinals would be well served to give more players more time off, especially someone like a Nolan Arenado, but not just Nolan Arenado. I think Lars Nootbaar, I think Mason Winn. There's a bunch of guys who I would like to see them give more days off to. Arenado, a future Hall of Famer who has spent his entire career playing every single day, when he is healthy, he has played every day. That being said, his offense has not been especially good this year. His defense has continued to be top-notch, but it's a year where you'd like to learn something, and there was a lot of talk about Nolan Gorman getting that opportunity at third base on an almost everyday basis. This conversation, I guess, doesn't totally matter right now because Arenado's injured and there's not much of a timeline on when he might be able to return. Maybe he doesn't return this year. I think there is a possibility that Arenado has actually played his last game as a Cardinal. I'm not convinced of that. I'm not even saying that's over 50% chance. I'm just leaving open the possibility that Arenado's time with the Cardinals could be done. He might be done for the rest of the year, and a decision gets made to get him somewhere else for next year. All that being said, I found it interesting when Ali talked about the role for Arenado on this team.
It is a very difficult question. And the only way to answer it is, while he's here, he needs to play. And until that's not the case, then, I mean, you're looking at a guy that you need to continue to put out there based on him being the leader of this club and being an everyday player and a Hall of Fame player. And every at-bat he has, man, I know it hasn't looked good this year, but I'm hopeful that it turns and it turns and it turns because of how hard he works. I mean, I've yet to come across someone that works as hard as this guy. It is extremely impressive. But yeah, it does make it difficult when you're trying to think of future and what does that look like? Is it here? Is it not here? Are you wanting to mix in the young guys? And that's something that I think starting in spring training, we knew was going to make it difficult to get Gorman the everyday at-bats to find out what he's all about. So it hasn't been the easiest to rotate these guys in, but I feel like we've done as good of a job as we can with the amount of guys that need at-bats.
More on the Gorman thing and the other players playing third base in a moment. I've been talking about this with some other folks. Bluntly, I don't love that answer from Ali, where he talks about Arenado, look, he's a leader of this team. He's a future Hall of Famer. He's going to play. That's not my favorite answer from him, because to me, that if Arenado's not giving you the best chance to win on any given day, even with him being a much better defensive player than whoever else you would put at third. Nolan Arenado is exponentially a better defensive third baseman than Nolan Gorman. Same thing with Thomas Ajayi. Same thing with Brendan Donovan. Like, whoever you want to put over there at third, in no way, shape, or form am I saying that their defense is going to match Arenado's defense. It simply is not. Arenado is arguably the greatest defensive third baseman that has ever played Major League Baseball. And while he is not at the absolute peak of his defensive prowess, he is still the best thing the Cardinals have, and he's having a nice season. All that being said, his offense, what he has done at the plate this year has not been good. And I'm not trying to take a shot at the guy. There's nothing personal about this. Arenado has long been one of my favorite guys to watch play baseball. But when you're talking about a guy with a .235 batting average and a .660 OPS, obviously from an offensive standpoint, it's just not happening for him. How much of that was connected to his shoulder here recently that he tried to play through? Maybe some of it. I'm not unwilling to be accepting of that. I mean, in the month of July, he hit .175. This is after he had a June where he hit .275 with a .730 OPS. And so that's respectable what he did in June, for sure. It's not great, but it is respectable. So his batting average from the end of June to the end of July when he last played, it went from .247 to .235. His OPS dropped from over 700 to that .660 number that I mentioned. So yeah, obviously, the shoulder issue that he was trying to play through has something to do with what's going on. So just using the overall season stats, not completely fair to Arenado. But even if we stop at the end of June and look at what his numbers are in that moment when he's basically a 250 hitter with a 700 OPS. That's not this super difference-making guy. And just the idea that, this could sound mean, that he's got like this God-given right to be the everyday third baseman, I think it's okay to give him some time and give him some more days. Now, also, what's Ollie going to say in this situation, right? I don't know where he stands on this. He knows what the numbers are, but he can't sit here and say, oh yeah, we're going to bench him. We're going to turn him into a bench player. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. That doesn't do any good in the forum that they were in earlier today. Especially, let's say they already know that Arenado's done for the year. There's a possibility that's the case. Maybe they know that this Arenado shoulder injury thing is a 5-6 week injury. So once you get to that point, you'd have to send him on a rehab assignment. That's going to take a week or so. And by the time you're done with that, there's a week, there's 2 weeks left in the season. Is it really worth it at that point? So what are you going to say about Arenado? If you already know that information, which I'm not saying they do, but maybe they do. It is not the most crazy thing to say. Well, then you continue to lift up your guy. You continue to lift up your leader. You continue to put this guy in a spot where you say he is going to be the everyday third baseman. So I think it is good sometimes to really think through the various possibilities on what's being said. We're going to continue to talk about that third base spot coming up in just a moment. What do they do? How does it look? Because yesterday was an opportunity to start Nolan Gorman in what you thought might be an okay spot in terms of who was pitching. He didn't start. Thomas Sejacy did. You want to get Sejacy playing time. How do you handle all of that? How do you give Gorman that runway that they talked about so much? We'll hear Ollie's thoughts on that coming up in just a moment here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are continuing to kind of go through our audit of what Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol had to say during the Gas House game today. We're talking through the third base situation yesterday. Thomas Sejacy was the guy who started at third base. Nolan Arenado out right now due to injury. We don't know when he is going to return. So you thought yesterday would have been a good day for Gorman to be in there. He wasn't. So Marmol was asked today, what does it really look like in terms of the third base position right now, the way the roster is set up?
And I'd like to continue to rotate them. When you look at Gorman, and I can say this because it's been a conversation with him, he needs to continue to work on his overall agility and mobility around the bag and just being able to get to certain balls and just move better. And that's something that he's going to continue to work on. And so JC, he gets to more. And Kapicka, he made a couple plays last night that were really nice plays. But offensively, he's got some stuff that he's got to tighten up as well. So you give him a decent amount of opportunity and rotate the two of them and hope that it starts to become a little bit more consistent on both sides of the baseball.
Yeah, I think that's what they're really looking for right now. Now, I would be of the belief that in a perfect world, I would get Gorman in there more often than not, just because I think there's more. I don't know. There's more of there's more urgency to having Gorman in there. As far as the third base position goes today, Gorman is at third. And when looking at Gorman and looking at third and making sure that he is continuing to get the opportunity, this is what Marmol said about getting him in there just about every day.
And that's what you don't want to miss on, is exactly what you just said, because it is over 1,400 at-bats. When you talk about he hasn't been consistent when it comes to playing time, there's been a decent amount of runs there, meaningful runs that give you an opportunity to show what you're all about. You can say the same thing about Burleson, but at some point you make it impossible for the manager to take you out of the lineup. That's what makes you an everyday player when you're young. Let's get serious, okay? Like you play enough to show what you're capable of doing, and then, man, just make it really damn hard for people to envision the lineup without you in it. And there's been certain guys, Donnie and Burley and others, that have done a nice job of that. So that's what makes the big leagues very difficult, is just taking advantage of the opportunities given.
The old adage in sports is don't like it, play better. And that's kind of what Ali is saying, if Nolan Gorman wants to be an everyday guy, well, then he has to perform in a way that you can't take him out. And I think at times he has started down that path, but he has not been able to remain consistent with it. And at other times, it feels like he's swinging a hot bat and they're still not finding that opportunity. It's a really convoluted situation for sure. We got a text message from Jim in Granite City who mentions he's a season ticket holder, listens to a lot of KMOX, talked about Gorman, you know, working on the agility and the range at third base, just like we heard Ali talk about. And he said Bernie mentioned that he really only has 43 appearances at third, and then says his observation, has Nolan gained any weight? Looks a little bulky at third to me. I haven't noticed that at all. Not that I've looked for that, but no, I don't think he looks bulky over there. I mean, his body is not that of the stereotypical third baseman, I guess, but I don't think it's anything that is worth mentioning. And as far as the 43 appearances at third, I mean, don't forget this is a guy who did come up in the minor leagues as a third baseman, and then the moment the organization acquires Nolan Arenado, they get him over to second base and have him go for there. So he's played a lot of third. He has not played a lot of third recently at the major league level. So that's the thing here. And I know at times it doesn't look great with him. The throw the other day with the Contreras play, the missed pop-up, things like that. And I'm not trying to dismiss those as things that don't matter, but I will say that I think it's worth watching him play through those issues and see how much better he can get at third. He's never going to be Nolan Arenado over there, but I think he can be more than serviceable and be a very much a plus player if the bat comes along with him. We'll continue to talk through this. We'll also talk with Corey Miller from Channel 5 in just a moment here on KMOX.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
It's Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. Another hour with you for Sports Open Line, and then many more hours with you because the Cardinals play late tonight in L.A. We've got Cardinals pregame at about 8:15, and then I'll be with you for that, and also Cardinals postgame, which last night, after a very, very quick game, ended about 12:40 in the morning. So who knows? We might go past 1 o'clock in the morning tonight. Very happy to welcome on to the program. He is our friend. He is a sports anchor and reporter over at Channel 5 KSDK. He is Corey Miller. Corey, appreciate the time as always. How are you?
I'm good, Matt. Great to be with you instead of our normal spot where we see each other, me stealing your seat in the Busch Stadium press box because it has a much better view than mine is. So it's nice to connect on here.
Is it really that much better, that seat, compared to the one seat to the right?
Well, that one seat to the right is not actually my seat either. I'm technically on the second row back there that does not have as great a view, you know, during a nice St. Louis summer day with the sunset and whatnot. So I sneak down in the front row when there's an open spot.
Okay, and we'll open up the curtain a little bit. I get up there a little bit late because I'm wrapping up pregame and everything, so I generally get in there maybe bottom of the first, top of the second, bottom of the second. Very often you are in the seat, and you always say you'll move, and I always tell you I don't care, and I'll sit in the seat to the right, and sometimes you move, and sometimes you don't, and it really doesn't matter to me at all, but you are kind to always be willing to move.
Well, you know, it always usually works out. There's usually a FanDuel spot open up there. You know, Jim Hayes is busy out and about, so I usually just slide over to his spot.
There you go. The dynamics of watching a Cardinals game as a media member from the press box. We haven't talked to you in a while. Obviously, it's been a very eventful last few weeks for the Cardinals, trade deadline, everything else that has taken place. Just from a we'll get into some more specific things in a moment, but considering the fact that a month ago, month and a half ago, this Cardinals team looked like a team that was very much contending for a playoff spot. And you fast forward, and they've been under 500 a couple times here over the last week or so. They had to trade at the deadline. How do you view like everything that has happened over the last few weeks?
I think if at the beginning of the season you would have said we're sitting here and the Cardinals are 500, you would have said, yeah, that sounds about right. But with just the swings of emotion and swings of wins and losses, it feels a lot more frustrating than that because this is not a bad team. We've seen them play really great baseball at times, and we've seen them play some pretty bad baseball at times. And, of course, that all evens out to a 500 record. But the swings have been so kind of drastic that it just leaves you wanting more. And then at the deadline, what everybody thought would happened exactly as planned, and no real big surprises or anything. So just kind of still stuck in the center here where not bad enough to, you know, sell everything off and try and start over, and not good enough to realistically think there's a chance at the postseason. I mean, you look at the standings and technically there is if they happen to go on a run, but everything we've seen so far kind of signals that's not going to happen. So it's just kind of this weird middle ground that, you know, we've kind of become accustomed to over the last couple of years.
Yeah, Oliver Marmol has talked about that, about how he wants to see the organization get to a point where they're not in that middle ground anymore, that they are a team that can go out and feel like they are going to win, and they can win on every single night. But, I mean, you're right. It's the last 2 years, it's been middle ground, middle ground, middle ground. I don't totally know. I don't know about you. I'm curious about what the messaging is going to be at the end of the season with Chaim Bloom, because there is a possibility, and you look at what just happened with the trade deadline and the number of A-level players that came in who are 2, 3, 4 years away from the big leagues. I do wonder if there's going to be any messaging around this being more of a long-term project.
That's a good point, and that's what I think a lot of people were thinking about at the deadline. As you mentioned, the guys they got back, other than maybe Blaze Jordan, who you might see sooner than some of the other guys, this is long-term, you know, kind of, I don't want to say projects, but long-term guys where you're not counting on them for a while. The guys you have at the major league level right now, you're kind of locked in with those guys. You didn't really trade anybody at the deadline. You know, obviously not maybe the older players like Arenado or even Contreras or Gray if they decide they don't, you know, they're ready to be traded during the offseason. But the guys you have are the guys you're going to have, it seems like. So I don't know what the messaging quite is going to be at the end of the year. And I don't know if the fan base is really going to be excited for it either.
It does feel like at times they're trying to serve two gods, where they want to be at least competitive at the big league level while also putting a lot of their resources in the minor league level. And I understand that, and I think you want to go out and win games, but to me it almost feels like some fans would maybe be more understanding of the rebuild if maybe it didn't feel like they were, you know, relatively close at the big league level.
Yeah, and it's a thing where you've already had a couple seasons that you really don't like, so if you start a, if you want to say the rebuild, we're now, why didn't it happen and start maybe 2 years ago where you could have been further along in this process if you want to look at it,
yeah,
if you want to look at it that way. So it's just that weird kind of don't know where you're at. You're still giving these guys a shot, but do you like what you see from all of them so far? You know, it's incomplete grades on a lot of these guys still so far. I did a commentary a couple weeks ago on Sports Plus on Sunday night when I hosted. They have to develop a homegrown star. They have to. That's kind of the thing that's looking everybody in the face right here. You have to start developing guys that, oh, I kind of like this guy. No, you got to develop a star at some point, because I don't think it's coming from outside the organization. And heck, they tried. They got Nolan Arenado. They got Paul Goldschmidt. And together, those guys did not win a playoff game together. So they've tried it every which way, and until they develop a real homegrown star, I think, or two, a couple of them, I think we're going to be in the same kind of holding pattern.
You hit on my biggest thing right now, that the talent at the top for the Cardinals versus the talent at the top for the really good teams, that's where the gap is. This team has good players that you can win with, that you can win with a Brendan Donovan, you can win with a Wilson Contreras, you can win with a Von Herrera. It's just those guys can't be your very top of the roster. You've got to have legit stars, legit all-stars, legit difference makers at the top of your roster, and it's been a little while since the Cardinals have had that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking on different rosters around the league the other day. Well, they've got them. They developed them. They got this guy. Why can't the Cardinals develop somebody? And listen, I'm not throwing in the towel on a lot of these guys. Like, if there is one Jordan Walker fan left in the world, it's going to be me, because I'm never going to give up on him no matter what. Yvan Herrera, you know, he certainly with the bat looks like he's going to be a guy you could hopefully build around. Got to find him a position for sure. And then a couple other guys who you're still just hoping and holding out hope for. But that's a bad place to be if you want to compete. So it's just, like I said, it's not a great place to be.
Yeah, hope can't be a strategy, and at times it feels like it is. And I don't know, I still like this team. The thing I challenge myself with hosting this show every night is – a lot of the things going on with this team has sort of a negative feel to it. I still like a lot of these players. I still think they play a fun brand of baseball often, not always, but often. You know, yesterday's game, that was about as entertaining of a baseball game as you're going to get. So we can sit here and we can talk about the things that are not going right while also acknowledging the fact there are some good things about this team all at the same time.
Absolutely. That goes back to kind of what I was saying earlier. Like last night's game, that was awesome. That's against the Dodgers, you know, a World Series favorite. They put on an awesome performance. Sonny Gray all the way down to Yoel Pozo once again. And this team has moments in them, and they can reach the highest of highs, but not, you know, on a consistent basis that you'd like. And that's just the most frustrating thing about it, because you see it's there, and you see it in spurts, but you don't see it for long enough to really believe that they – could put something together to compete in the postseason.
Yeah, the roller coaster nature right now, especially of what they're doing from an offensive standpoint. Yeah, against San Diego, they score the 9 runs in the first game, and they don't score more than 3 runs in the final 2 games. And the series against Miami, they score 7 in the first game. They get shut out in the final 2 games. The series in San Diego, same deal. That second game, they put up 8 runs, and then outside of a 9th inning rally in the final game, they score 1. Like, it just – it. And I know that's true across all of Major League Baseball to a certain extent, but man, does it feel more pronounced with this Cardinals team.
Yeah, it does for sure. And, you know, I'm sitting here watching a bit of this Reds and Cubs game right now, and it's got me thinking about what the rest of this season looks like. I mean, Wrigley Field is a Tuesday night, and it is just totally packed. Mm-hmm. And I'm tuning in. I watched the Rockies game, or part of the Rockies game the other day. it was totally packed. I'm watching the Mets. It's just, I'm really worried for what this is going to look like down the stretch, because this is, you know, not a one-year blip thing anymore. This has happened a couple years in a row, and I just want to get back to being excited to go to the ballpark, just feeling that energy, because when it's there, it's as good as, if not, you know, better than anywhere else around the league. And I'm seeing it other places. People are hungry for baseball again around the country. And I just wish that appetite could be fulfilled here a little more.
That was actually going to be the last thing that I asked you about. So it leads right into it. I lament so often exactly what you said. I mean, those games against San Diego, it's a party at Padres games, and people are having so much fun, and the games at Wrigley Field, everything. And I watch those games, and I just think to myself, man, I want to experience this again in St. Louis.
It just, it stinks. I mean, we were talking in the sports office, I guess, the other day. Well, more than the other day, I guess, when the Cardinals were at Wrigley, whatever the last time was. I was like, when was the last time Busch Stadium had this kind of juice to it? And this is just a regular season Cardinals-Cubs game at Wrigley Field. And I thought, gosh, maybe when Juan Yepes hit that homer against the Phillies in the postseason, however, was that, you know, 4 years ago now or whatever it was? It's right there. It's ready to be captured, and it's just, it stinks that it's not. Because we all know what it felt like. We've seen it. It's happened before. It used to happen all the time, and maybe we got too used to it. And now that it's been gone for a little bit, everybody's taking it pretty hard. But man, it just feels like it's right there, ready to be captured again.
Yeah, hopefully it's back sooner than later. Corey, what are you guys working on right now for viewers to check out on Channel 5?
Well, you know, actually tomorrow I am getting in the car. I'm heading up to Champaign, Illinois to interview Brett Bielema, coach of Illini football. They've got a lot of good buzz around them to start this season. And, you know, I'm sure I'll be at Mizzou camp here a couple times before their season kicks off. Lots of college football intrigue around the area. Pretty much no matter who you're pulling for, you should have a good product to enjoy. So we're getting ready for college football season and high school football season as well. We got our long show starting again, Five on Your Sideline, on August 29th. So it's about to be football weather and football season around St. Louis.
Isn't it nice when both Missouri and Illinois football are completely and totally relevant?
I love it. And, you know, I went to Mizzou and people think I, you know, don't like the Illini. I want everybody to be good.
Yeah.
It gives me more things to talk about. It's infinitely more interesting. So I'm really excited for this football season, because we could have two programs that you know, have outside shots at making the 12-team playoff, I think.
He is Corey Miller. Check him out on Channel 5. You can follow him on Twitter at Corey_Miller5. Corey, thanks for the time. We'll see you at the ballpark when the team's back in town.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
You bet. That's Corey Miller joining us on the program. We appreciate him spending a few moments with us tonight. We'll take a break, and we're going to jump back into what Oliver Marmol had to say today during the Gas House Gang, and I'll give you my thoughts on that. You can always chime in, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. You can comment on the video chat. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air. Lots of ways to get connected with the program. We're back with more in a moment on KMOX.
Now, back to the Graybar Sports Open Line on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
We are back as we roll on for another 35 minutes or so, and then we'll get into Cardinals baseball after the 8 o'clock news. Welcome back into the program. As always, you can chime in, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call, that's how you text. Tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, or leave a comment on the video chat, and we'll get to that as we roll along. Wanted to get into this. What we're doing today is we are going back through much of what Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol said during his weekly conversation on the Gas House Gang, and talking through some of the different things that he mentioned today. And just where this team goes moving forward, I think, is a really key point, because they still want to win games this year, but there are also other things that they want to accomplish in terms of getting guys playing time and still learning more about players and things like that. So Ollie was asked specifically on opportunities post deadline, and if maybe the lineup and the pitching decisions would actually look different after they make the moves where they didn't buy, they sold, they made the team worse at the trade deadline. And I thought this was interesting what he had to say, because from his perspective, as you'll hear him saying, not a whole lot changes.
Not a whole lot changes from my perspective. If you look at what I've been tasked with this year, it was make sure that there's growth within our young guys, our young core, and that we continue to our staff be head down and developing them to get them to the next level of their career, and win as many games along the way. So not a whole lot changes in being able to give these guys opportunities and continue to do exactly that, which is grow the heck out of them. So I was asked basically, hey, what does this look like moving to next year? I mean, I feel like the whole year has been that. We've just been able to win a little bit more games than people expected, which made it interesting. But nothing from my seat changes in giving these guys opportunity. Now, with our pen, having Mats and Phil and Helsley gone, it does provide a ton of opportunity for some young guys to show what they're capable of doing. And we'll mix and match and see them in different environments and leverage situations to see how they respond to it. I mean, you look at outside of JoJo, there is a lot of dudes in that pen with less than a year of service. So it's a great opportunity for them, and that's the way they should view it from a position player standpoint. The rotation is not easy, and we can talk a little bit about it, Bernie, but you have Jordan, who needs playing time. You need Newt, who needs playing time. You got Burley out there. You got Vic, who's trying to figure it out. And you're rotating these guys through. But by rule, they only let me play three of them in the outfield. So on any given day, you're going to be mad about the one that's sitting. And you can ask, why does he have an off day today? It's because I have to sit in one of them. So in my opinion, Burley's done a phenomenal job, deserves to be an everyday player. You talk about a player that has been head down and just taking advantage of every opportunity given. He's one of them, and he has solidified himself as an everyday player. And then we need to rotate the other guys in order to give them at-bats, and hopefully they start to take to it. So that's the way I view it at the moment.
And really, outside of the fact that the bullpen looks different, that's the key thing here. The bullpen looks different because three high-leverage relievers got moved out. So you have to – somebody has to cover those innings. And as he said, an opportunity is a word that you're going to hear a lot between now and game 162. This is where the opportunity presents itself for the Riley O'Briens, the Matt Swansons, the Andre Grenillos, these young guys who don't have a whole lot of major league service time, what they're going to be able to do here moving forward. And it's going to be that's actually an area I joke. I like to say I'm self-aware. I joke about my my shortcomings sometimes. One of my shortcomings when it comes to evaluating baseball is I fall in love with the with like relief pitchers. Like, I think they're just going to develop into awesomeness. And I love this group of relief pitchers that the Cardinals have right now, even without Ryan Helsley and Phil Maton and Steven Matz. And those guys were great. This is not a shot at them whatsoever. They did an amazing job. But I'm really excited about what we're going to see from Riley O'Brien. I love what we've seen from Matt Swanson. Andre Grenillo, what a great story. A guy who really came on this year at AAA and just kept continuing to deal in big ways to a point where he finally gets the big league opportunity, and he's been able to do a nice job with that. Like, so last night, and I know O'Brien gives up a run, he gives up a leadoff double, and then to the Dodgers' credit, they're able to do what you're supposed to do. And that when you have a runner on at second and you have nobody out and you need one run, you find a way to get that run in. And that's what the Dodgers did. And that's credit to the Dodgers. And I wish the Cardinals were able to do that more often than they do. But that's what it was yesterday. That was the leadoff double and just getting a guy around. I don't think Riley O'Brien pitched poorly. He just gave up a double to a team that can execute getting a runner home from second on a no-out situation, and that's exactly what went on, and O'Brien was fine. Romero, we know who he is, but now it's another chance for him to get these higher leverage opportunities. He's going to get the opportunity for a lot of saves. So that's the only change, according to Ollie. The goal of getting guys playing time and all that sort of stuff, which we talked about earlier with Nolan Gorman, it still exists, and it can be a challenge. Now, I like the lineup tonight. I think this lineup has the opportunity to accomplish a lot of things. The lineup tonight, and we'll talk more about this when we get into Cardinal pregame, it has both Gorman and Walker in it. Gorman's batting seventh at third, and Walker is batting ninth in right field. And then Pozo is catching. This lineup tonight, because Nootbaar's playing center field, I think this lineup is the one that actually gives you the best chance to score the most amount of runs right now. Donovan leading off. Herrera's the DH batting second. Burleson's in left batting third. Contreras at first base batting fourth. Nootbaar in center field batting fifth. Wynn the shortstop batting sixth. Nolan Gorman at third base batting seventh. Pozo catching batting eighth. Walker in right field batting ninth. If the goal is to score the most amount of runs and the goal is to give certain players as much playing time as possible, namely Walker and Gorman, this lineup that has been written down tonight for the Cardinals, I think accomplishes those goals. If this was the lineup that was used most often between now and the end of the season, I think that is what I would very much be in favor of. Continuing to talk through kind of what it looks like here moving forward, one of the things that's been talked about a lot all season and going into the season was this being the runway year, and the idea of it being a runway year was you were going to learn about players. Now, I would contend that it hasn't really been that, right? That, and I don't know really what you've learned. I think you've learned something about Alec Burleson, and I think you've learned something about Matthew Liberatore. And outside of that, I don't know what anybody's done this year that you didn't really kind of already know or expect. I guess you can throw Ivan Herrera in there. But Herrera, you knew, was going to be a plus offensive player. You could throw Joel Pozo in there, but he wasn't with the organization. So you were going to be learning about him no matter what. I don't think the expectations of, you know, this year being a year where you were going to all of a sudden learn all these things, that's actually played out that way. But Ollie was asked today, what can you still learn about here in the final 2 months of the season?
You have a pretty good sense of the majority of the guys, of who, what they are and what they can do and what they can't do. But that doesn't mean the next 2 months aren't extremely important and continuing to evaluate growth, because our job's to get them better. So if there's something we feel like they can't do or haven't shown the ability to be consistent with it, then it's my job, it's our staff's job to find consistency in that. But you are starting to find out what the strengths and weaknesses are and what you're dealing with and how do they respond to pressure and the things of that nature. But yes, the next 2 months are definitely important.
What do you see?
I mean, take Sajacy, for example, right? He came up the first time and lit it up, was taking some really good at bats, driving the baseball all over the field, making a lot of contact. Like, the chase rate was high and we needed to kind of get him to do a better job with just decision-making there. But for the most part, man, you look up and you see his average and his OPS and you feel good about what he was doing. Well, his second time around hasn't gone his way. So you can't get too high or too low. That's just a perfect example of not being sure just yet of what he's capable of doing.
That's Oliver Marmol talking to the Gas House Gang. Steve sends in a message. Steve, I hope you're watching along as we do this, because I'm going to ask you to send in another message if you can. Steve writes in, you also learned who doesn't have it too. Have you? I'm not trying to come at you, but, and maybe I'm just missing something, but.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Who have you learned that about? You haven't learned that about Nolan Gorman? He's had an up-and-down year. He still has that back issue. I think you're worried about that, but you've seen him flash the moments of him having that 30 home run potential and not maybe Nolan Arenado, if you want to put, we can put that, but I mean, that's not what this year was about. So that's not who the runway is for. So if we've learned that Nolan Arenado absolutely is on the decline, okay, I'll give you that, but that's not the point of the year. I don't think we've learned anything about Jordan Walker. Walker's still young and he has those moments as well. Anybody wants to throw away Jordan Walker, and that doesn't mean Walker needs to stay on the big league team. If he starts to fall off again, because he looked really good, and I hope that continues on, but we've seen him go through those periods again. There's no guarantee that it's going to continue on. If there is a situation where it makes sense for Walker to be back at AAA, I don't have a problem with that. But Jordan Walker is incredibly young, and all the underlying numbers continue to say that this is a guy who has a chance to really explode and move forward. Now, maybe it doesn't happen for him, but I wouldn't throw him away. All right, Steve, I appreciate this. You mentioned Pedro Pages. I think we know that Pages is not a very good offensive player, and his greatest value comes from a defensive standpoint, the trust that the pitchers have in him, his ability to call a game, things like that. But Steve, I would argue back at you, we knew that, didn't we? That's nothing new. We knew that. He never profiled as a guy who was going to be a really good offensive player. So I guess that's the point that I'm trying to make in all this. What has happened this year to really change your opinion on somebody? And I don't think our opinion changes on Pedro Pais. Now, if he would have put together a spectacular offensive season, then the opinion changes because we hadn't seen that from him before and it wasn't expected. That's why maybe the opinion changes a little bit on Alec Burleson, because he had the slow end of the season last year and then the slow start to the year this year, and then he turned it on. And he made changes in what he's doing that were clear. He very much changed his approach at the plate in what he is going to swing at. Steve also mentions Victor Scott. He's still super young guy. Still super young guy. And I wouldn't say his upside isn't that high. If he is somebody that can start driving the ball a little bit with his speed. Now, do I think as highly of Scott's potential right now as I did at the beginning of the season? No. Like I would say his stock has come back a little bit for me. I'm not trying to run away from that, but I'm also not closed off to the fact that this is a guy who can still turn into a dynamic player. So that's the point that I'm trying to make, that I don't think they've really learned much about guys this year. There's things that have happened that lead you in a certain direction, but Victor Scott was terrible offensively last year. He's been terrible offensively this year, and my long-term feelings about him hasn't changed much. Maybe a little bit, but hasn't changed much. And Ali talked, maybe we'll play that when we come back, where Ali talked about the work that Scott's been doing to try to get better. We'll take a break, have more in just a moment. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Now, back to the Graybar Sports Open Line on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
We're taking you till 8 o'clock tonight. Then we'll get the 8 o'clock news with Maria, and then I'll be back with you for Cardinals pregame. Cardinals-Dodgers tonight, game two of a three-game series after the Cardinals win yesterday 3-2. Continuing to roll through some of the things that Oliver Marmol had to say today. We're playing his cuts from Gashouse Gang, and then I'm sort of giving my thoughts on it, and we're talking with some other folks as well about what they think of hearing all of it. I always find it to interesting to listen to him on these Tuesdays, because I think he says more on these Tuesdays than he does in a lot of the other forums where he is speaking publicly. Let's talk about starting pitching, because the Cardinals have two veterans in the rotation in Sonny Gray and Miles Michaelis. Gray will be back next year. Right now, he's your number one starter. Miles Michaelis is not going to be back next year, barring something very unexpected happening. So you've got three young guys in Matthew Liberatore, who's been really fun to watch this year, Andre Pallante, who has been up and down, and Michael McGreevy, who's the guy who most recently got the opportunity. You want these three younger starters to have a solid final 2 months of the season, taking, if there is such a thing, taking some momentum into next year, certainly solidifying their spot. Like right now, as it sits at 7:45 p.m. on August 5th, I think you already go into next season with Matthew Liberatore and Michael McGreevy written in ink for the rotation next year. And I don't think you say that about Andre Pallante. I think he's somebody who probably still has to earn the job. That can change over what happens over these couple months. If Andre Pallante has a final 2 months of the season this year like he did last year, then he's somebody that you feel very comfortable with the rotation going in next season. Ollie talked a lot about what those three young starters really need to do and what he would like to accomplish with them over these final 2 months.
I love that our three young guys are lined up back to back to back and being able to see them one night after another in Libby going, and then McGreevy, and then Pallante. Specific to those guys, Libby's done a nice job with what he's about and who he is and his preparation in between starts. I really like his process and overall approach to that. In between starts, he does a phenomenal job of giving himself the best shot and using his bullpens in between starts appropriately to attack either what he didn't do well or what he wants to continue to improve on moving forward. So I'm happy there. Just continuing to take a look at McGreevy, you look at how San Diego attacked him at home, man. Those righties and Tatis and Machado and Bogarts, they all just stayed inside of a sinker, shot him the other way. They had a very, very good approach against him. Cronenworth used a big part of the field, and there's not a whole lot he did about it that outing. He goes back to San Diego, they throw up some runs on him early, and then you can see he start blowing up some guys inside with the sinker, moving their feet a little bit, which kind of opened up the other side of the plate for him. And that's a good adjustment for a young guy, especially with, you got to think of, put yourself in his shoes. We have all the hit by pitches. The last thing he wants to do is kind of flare that up again and hit Machado or hit Bogarts or Tatis. But he said, the heck with it, man. It's part of my game. I got to move these guys' feet. He does it. He blows up Bogarts. And he starts to get on a little bit of a roll and starts to feel himself those last three innings. You can tell the demeanor, the overall presence and confidence was different the last three innings compared to the first three. That's a great adjustment for a young guy. Those are the things you're looking for, because then you double down on that. You give him some love for it and allow him to have that level of confidence going into his next one. And then with Pallante, man, we talked a decent amount about it. It's going to be, there's not many guys in the league that are starters that have a three pitch mix. At times even a four pitch mix. Like, you start to break down starters across the league that have four pitches or less, and there's not many of them. So he's going to have to land his spin at a high rate in order to survive with that, because if you can eliminate one of them, and then he's just a slider fastball mix, and that makes it difficult. So the sinker has helped. The curveball, when he's able to land it and expand with it, has helped. But that's the growth you're trying to see out of Pallante.
Interesting stuff right there, really rolling through those three guys. And I think the point he makes there about Pallante at the end, about how Major League Baseball has evolved to a point now where a lot of starters are going to have five or sometimes more pitches. You're going to have multiple variations of the fastball that you're going to be able to throw, doing a lot of different things. And the fact that Pallante doesn't have that, if all of a sudden one of those pitches isn't working, you become a two-pitch guy, and it can become a tough night. So something that he needs to make sure that those three pitches he does have, that there's a lot of consistency with them. And then what can you do to add some other variations? When we think about the rotation next year, you don't want to, as healthy as it's been this, they are ripe for a tough season when it comes to pitching injuries next year, because it's been so good this year, abnormally good. And you give the organization credit because they had a plan on what they wanted to do to keep pitching healthy. But you think about what's going to be available for them next year. Quinn Matthews is somebody that you would like to see get in there. And I mentioned this the other day. He had a really good last start at Memphis. If he can put three or four of those together, maybe you find a way to get him a start or two at the big leagues before this season comes to an end, if an opportunity presents itself, so he can kind of get his big league feet wet at the end of the year going into next season. Maybe there is an opportunity to bring in somebody, probably via trade more than anything else. Maybe that's something that does happen. But Kyle Leahy is a guy who, he does have all those pitches. And I think he profiles out as somebody who could be a starter. And Ollie gave his thoughts on the possibility of seeing Leahy as a starter, both long-term, but also whether or not we might see that before this season comes to an end.
I think he can start. I think he has the pitch arsenal to do that. You also have to monitor his overall workload. Halfway through the year, he was probably the one that had a red flag of on pace for more than what we would want. So if you throw him into that rotation, I think you start butting up against that pretty quickly. But yes, that is an option. I like some of the adjustments he's made. This is a guy that he has enough pitches to get through a lineup several times through. And he has confidence in being able to do that as well. So I think it's a fair question and one that we continue to talk through.
That is Oliver Marmol from earlier today. One more break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up Sports Open Line here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Only about a minute left here in the program. Thanks so much for being tuned in with us tonight. Hopefully you're not going anywhere, because we've got a late night of baseball coming your way. The Cardinals and the Dodgers. If the Cardinals can come away with a win tonight, they will secure a series victory. They would also secure a 500 road trip. So there's certainly some stuff on the line. I'm most curious. We've seen this trend here recently where the Cardinals will have a good night and then they will not have a good night. can they follow up yesterday's good win with another good win this evening? For me, that's kind of the main talking point going into this game tonight, and we'll see how it all plays out. Pitching matchup, Cardinals have Miles Michaelis on the mound, 6-8, 4.83 ERA. He's been good recently, looking to continue that run he has been on. Right-hand pitcher Emmett Sheehan is going to go for the Dodgers. He is 2-2 with a 3.60 ERA. So Maria is going to have the news for you just after 8 o'clock, and then at about 8:15 or so, I am going to be back with you for Cardinals and Dodgers coverage right here on KMOX.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.